Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Tobin and Leroy here with you on FM 104.3 WQAM. Get to our headlines this hour, brought to you by Doral Hyundai, home of the Pricito, our lowest price. Visit us at Doral Hyundai or DoralHyundai.com. Panthers win yesterday 8-5. The Cats win a thriller at A.J. Greer, Luke Cunningham, Evan Rodriguez, Anton Lundell. They lit the lamps. Sam Bennett, he gave the Cats the lead back 6-5 in the third period. Seth Jones had a huge pair. Brad Marchand added an empty netter, and Sergei Bobrovsky, the greatest night. But he did go to 9th all-time in NHL wins.
33%. That's not a good average.
It's not, but.
They won.
They won.
Win the game that was there. It was a high-scoring game.
Crazy game.
Crazy game. Thank because, you. I mean, nobody just had one goal and a break. And I never seen so many. There was a lot of penalties in that game, weren't there? Seemed like somebody was in the power play the whole third period.
A lot of power plays, yeah. A lot of penalties, a lot of special teams going on with that one. The Heat, they win 115-113. Khalil Ware, our favorite neighborhood Kryptonian. Big time block at the end of the game, even though the refs tried to screw us.
Bridges will inbound. Pump fake twice, three times, four times. Finally gets it in. To McBride, up top, tries to shake Davion, mid-range, pushes it up, missed it, back to Cat, put it up, blocked by Ware! Pulled down, count the bucket, are you kidding me? They can, you know what, there's a thought here, though. You call it if you're not sure, so that you can look at it. Ware had that thing at the apex, the only thing will be the issue if it was over the cylinder. Take a look at the replay. Oh, that's a block.
The goaltend play is under review.
I gotta tell you, I love reasonable jacks in a pinch, because I was sitting there and I was fuming at that call. He goes, okay, hold on, let's hear this out. But that ref came in there and I was like, I thought it was like a loose ball foul they were calling. Like, I didn't. I was like, what do you mean that was a
goaltending?
I was like, goaltending. It was a clear as day block. Clear as day. Great play by Khalil Ware yesterday. He was awesome. Let's hear a little bit from Eric Spoelstra on his young big man.
I mean, it just felt like the multiple efforts, even the block, you know, that was called a goaltend. Like, it was a great effort on his part. You know, the rebounding, you know, was very intentional. And, you know, the multiple efforts. I love that drive that he had with 4 minutes to go. You know, it was kind of a loose ball caught on the baseline. It could have been one of those flip shots, but he wanted to make sure that this thing was going to the rim and got the and one. And, you know, that showed me, you know, there's growth in time, score, context, swing moments. Like, hey, let's not just, you know, get a shot that you might take in the first 3 minutes of a game. But also, like, you know, some of the defense that he had on, you know, one of the best scorers in this game. I'm not talking about, you know, necessarily getting stops. It's just you have to negotiate through a lot of different things, pick and roll basketball, flares, you know, a guy who knows how to draw fouls is crafty. And then when he's not on him, like, hey, you got to patrol the paint and make sure that you're protecting the rim for us. And so there's a lot of different kind of roles that he had to do, you know, throughout the course of the game.
Yeah, I mean, like, it sucks having Bam out, but I do think that this is going to be good for his
development. Learning. Like, he's gotten more minutes, more demands, and like, he's been able to.
I just loved his persona yesterday, right? Because, like, everybody feels like he's got this nonchalant way about him, and he was, like, he was so into rubbing it in the Knicks' face yesterday with the flexing and the
some people,
the big play. It was so great to see.
Some people's demeanor, you may think that, but that's not how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
And we sometimes, when you see one athlete act a certain way or react a certain way, we immediately think that's the standard for try hard and all of this. And some people's personality just doesn't allow them to go there. And Kalel seems more laid back. It doesn't mean that he ain't going to get in your face, talk trash, or play hard. But it just, you know, he just does it in a different way.
Listen, just because you have a calm demeanor doesn't mean you can't get meaner.
Quickly.
That was why?
Go ahead.
-1.
That was just terrible.
For show poniness.
No, not even that. You probably should be in the corner.
Why?
Because that was so bad.
What do you mean, dude? That's a great point.
You wonder why.
You understand why, though, right?
And I got to tell you, how you are about the Heat?
Yep.
Oh, the you over there.
She was giving you the business during the break?
Oh, she want to fight.
Because you were giving her your terrible Notre Dame take?
No. Absolutely. He was giving me his terrible Notre Dame take.
It was terrible. You just said you agree with me.
I agree semi, but I still said, why are we playing football?
Semi-agree.
You can semi-agree. I can agree with parts of what you said, but not all of what you said.
Okay. Notre Dame lost to two ranked teams. You lost to two unranked teams. That means that when you lose.
Stop making it, though.
Hold on. Wait. When you lose to two unranked teams, you drop farther down in the standings. That's how Notre Dame is above you.
First off, I'm not angry that Notre Dame's above Miami. I'm just saying you're upset about it, Tobin.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's just like the game. Like I've never.
Do you understand how it happens though?
If
you get ranked every week and you lose to an unranked team, you will drop farther down.
It feels like boxing. It's like you're just going on style points. It's dumb. Like I've never.
What do you mean? You lost to an unranked team.
Yeah, but you didn't lose to a team that's ahead of you. You beat them. Like I've never understood a sport where the subjective weight of losses matters more than wins. Direct wins. You beat the team.
I agree. So
yeah, but
my
it was 3 months ago.
Who cares?
I don't make any sense. That I disagree with you because right now,
so
whatever,
you should get credit.
Notre Dame, so you want to put Notre
Miami
Dame above
should get
us
credit
for right
beating
now.
Notre Dame.
Absolutely.
Even though it was the first game
why
of the year.
Why do we play them?
Which
do we
team
play
is
the game?
Better right now?
Why do we have Chick-fil-A kickoffs and Peach Bowls to begin the games if they are not important games?
Who do you think
if we had Canes Notre Dame this week, I think the Canes would win. I would. We saw it. Like you, why would you think something else would happen? Like what's changed?
You think the committee is looking at the team?
I'm not talking about the committee. I'm asking you.
But the whole conversation is why Notre Dame is ranked higher than Miami.
I know why. Politics and marketing.
It's not politics.
Politics and marketing, dude. Every single time.
You lost to two unranked teams.
I'm disappointed that
you
haven't.
Would you agree? If you lose to a ranked team versus losing to an unranked team, you lose to an unranked team, you're going to drop farther in.
No, obviously.
Okay.
Obviously.
Okay. So there. If you lose to two unranked teams and Notre Dame has only lost to two top 10 teams, do you see how that separation could be?
Not when you beat them. You would have an argument if that was their only loss.
All right.
Then I wouldn't be sitting here complaining about
this. I would like to have you say, yeah, I can see it. But so you're saying Miami should be 10th and Notre Dame should be 14th.
No, I mean, you could have them lower. I think I saw, was it Danny Cannell yesterday? I think he had the Canes 10th and Notre Dame 11th. I'm like, yeah, that's appropriate. Or you could have them 11th and 12th. That's fine. I don't care how low the Canes are, just Notre Dame can't be higher than them. It's dumb.
And you can't, in my opinion, you can't put Notre Dame in the college football playoff if you don't put Miami. If Miami continue, if they both win out,
doesn't make sense. Like,
but
that
they,
doesn't make
you,
sense. It doesn't
you
make
can't,
sense. Why
here,
do we
you
play
can't,
football?
When
you
they
can't
go, you can't get past the fact that you lost to two unranked teams. Now, what I would say to you is this: if you beat the hell out of Virginia Tech, and beat the hell out of Pittsburgh, I'm more than sure you will move up ahead. But if you squeak by those two teams.
Listen, the Canes and Mario Cristobal, I'm always going to be scared that they could blow it against these teams. Like, that's always got to be a thing that's a factor. I'm just talking about straight up right here. It's weird to me that in a sport where you have a result and we go like, you've been like, I feel like we've all been brainwashed into that, Leroy. It's crazy.
You had
the game. They played whole off season to prepare for it. Team's healthier than they ever have been, and you're like, well, you know what? 3 months have gone by, and they played Navy, so they're different. It's like, huh?
You can't see. Everybody's trying to compare this. Louisville is now ranked. Miami dropped later. You can't look at then. You have to look at the overall. I'm agreeing. I'm not even.
It's really not. It has nothing to me. And this isn't. And by the way, I've been steady on this through college football. Whenever. This isn't just a Canes thing. I find it stupid because we change the rules. They do this for the SEC all the time. Because the SEC, it's like a Ponzi scheme of rankings. And it's like, why don't the games matter? They did the same thing with FSU when they screwed FSU.
Mm-hmm.
Now it ended up being right because FSU didn't have their quarterback. But it's not fair that the games happened and you just decide we don't want you.
Exactly,
it's
like
dumb.
It's like we forget
being
also
paid
Alabama
by the committee to say no to Miami. So no, Michigan's not getting in.
Alabama,
I'm telling you, they're not good enough to be in. They have an excellent quarterback, and they don't have enough around them. So relax. I'm not that guy. Okay, I'm not that guy that's going to make the rules fit my team. I'm not.
But
it is what it is.
This happened a couple of years ago with the Georgia Tech thing where they were like, oh, you lost to Georgia Tech. It's such a shame. And then Georgia Tech went nail for nail with Georgia.
Right.
And they keep taking these ACC losses and they're like the Canes lost to a Conference USA team.
Right.
It's like, all right, yeah. Hey, ultimately, don't lose. I get it. That's the thing. But the thing is that it's the only conference, it feels like, that is supposedly a major conference. That, like, if you lose a game, it's a death sentence. And it shouldn't be.
Because they
figure
your conference is so easy that it hurts you more.
Yeah, but who's to say that? Like, they're playing a bunch of independent teams. They're not even in a conference. And then the SEC, you fluff up all these other schools like they're the greatest thing ever. And it's just so you get – it's like this pal. He sits there and he's like – well, they better remember where their bread is buttered when it comes to these rankings. It's like, what? What are you threatening people? It's stupid. So my thing about this is, listen, the Canes could be ranked. For me, the Canes could be ranked.
There you go. Don't get excited. Miami still has to close out the season, and they're on upset alert. They're not guaranteed to win anything. If they go to a regular bowl, they still have to win it.
That really has nothing to do with nothing, though. Like, again, I'm fully aware as a Miami Hurricanes fan in my whole life and in the ACC, I'm fully aware the Miami Hurricanes can Miami Hurricane and we Mario Cristobal can Mario Cristobal. Really has nothing to do with nothing. My whole point of it is the Canes still have this win that was impressive against Notre Dame to open up the season, which, by the way, they were double-digit underdogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat their ass that game. It was close at the end. They put a little window dressing, but they beat their ass. And then everybody's counterpoint to it was, oh, it was 3 months ago. It's like, so? The game was the game.
No, I only say it's 3 months ago not to dismiss them beating Notre Dame. But as the season goes on, your rankings can improve or get better or worse based on how you're playing during the season. And you can't keep going back to, oh, well, we beat Notre Dame. We shouldn't be ranked that low. You lost to two unranked teams. That's why you're where you are. It has nothing to do with Notre Dame as to why you're ranked where you are. It has everything to do with Miami.
Yeah, but
so stop talking about Notre Dame.
But in the totality of it, like, Notre Dame started off the season with two losses. Whoever they were to, they got away basically the bad stuff's in the beginning, and just perception is reality.
You ever heard that? And as far as college football is concerned, it's better to lose early than late.
That's dumb.
Why?
It's just dumb. It's like the season is the season. When it happened, it happened.
So you say no rankings till after the season's over.
Oh, I would love that. I would love no rank or middle of the season is when the rankings are or strength of games. It's all dumb. It's like it's all subjective.
Now you're coming up with that because your
team, I've literally been saying this forever. I've been saying this about college football forever. I think it's the dumbest sport because we're all sitting. It's like a beauty pageant.
You know what it is, right?
What?
It's for the rank for TV.
I know.
You can't sell it.
You can. There's no more. Like there is no more.
Like, I'm not defending.
Miami's going to get you views. So I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that because it's like Miami's a polarizing team.
Miami will get you views, but it won't draw nationally like Notre Dame will in attendance.
When you get in an argument with people and their fans. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You just can't win. It's annoying that you can't have grown-up conversations. Leroy defends Notre Dame. You know how much I despise Notre Dame? I'm not defending Notre Dame.
Get on board, baby.
No, I'm just reading the text.
Get on board, though.
Huh?
Just get on board, though.
Join the dark side.
It has nothing to do with joining the dark side.
Just because
I'm just tired of hearing people complain about their situation when it's your fault you're in that situation.
Yeah, but that's
shut up and deal with it.
Literally, unless you go undefeated, you're gonna do some finagling throughout the season.
1,000%. It's like I don't see anybody questioning Alabama and the fact that they lost to Florida State.
Right.
No one ever seemingly
because
forgot.
It was early.
But that's stupid.
But that's so stupid.
So how long?
Why do they make the game such a big deal?
Let me ask you a question.
Yep.
You know the rankings change every week.
Yep.
Okay? Based on whether you win or you lose.
Yep.
So if you win early and you're a top 10 team and you drop and then you win a bunch of games in a row, you're probably going to go back, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you lose late and you're in the top 10 with all the other teams that they won't put ahead of you that having good seasons – if you lose late, then you drop back behind all those other teams.
Yeah, but why does it?
So you may drop more because there's more of a resume for all the teams in the country.
That's fine, but why does a team that doesn't have a conference that the only
that's
time
that's a whole nother conversation?
But they don't have a conference, and so they have to load. They may have to make their schedule somewhat respectable looking because they're taking on
they play
armed forces.
USC,
Texas A&M, and Miami, and they lost two of them.
Right,
and so like. They get this, the only part of their schedule that is respectable, they blow, but then they get to fluff up.
Do they play USC?
They beat USC.
They beat USC.
Which was, 20th? Well, like, great Jakes.
Yeah. Who else? I can't think of who else they beat.
Exactly.
No, I get it. I understand. I'm not, again, like, you can argue in fight about where my team should be, but you should be complaining about your team losing to two unranked teams.
I get you.
And you're leaving it to the mercy of everybody else. Don't complain about everybody else because you lost two games.
But then it would be like literally two teams in the country you could say don't get to complain about. It would be like Indiana and Ohio State. Everybody else is going to do some finagling.
Sure.
That's how it is.
Absolutely. So should Alabama be higher than Georgia?
I don't know.
Who just beat Oklahoma just beat Alabama. That was 11-4.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, yeah.
Take a break. Back after this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Fix your camera, Leroy. Tobin and Leroy back with you here on FM 104.3 WQAM. And very excited to talk to our next guest. Joins us in studio, the voice of your Florida Panthers right here on WQAM as the Cats win a wild one last night. Leroy 8-5 over the Canucks. Doug Plagan's joining us here. Hello, Doug. How are you?
What's going on? How cool is this?
Yeah. Very excited to have you.
Yeah. Usually we see you in your house.
Yeah, this is awesome.
It's awesome to have you. That was a wild one last night, man.
It was. I was just telling Leroy before we jumped in here, it almost felt like two or three different hockey games in one, the way that it started. The Panthers fell behind early, and it wasn't for a lack of execution or anything like that. Vancouver just came out, cashed in on some early opportunities, even though the Panthers had some good pressure. Stuck with it, as we've seen, has been a kind of a hallmark trait of this team in recent years. They really don't panic, and we saw that again last night. And that's a trait that they've had for a while. And got that big lead, then Vancouver battled back, and the Panthers ultimately ended up pulling away at the end. So again, there was a little bit of everything in that game last
night. Do you like calling games like that? All of the goals, is that exhausting? You've gotten used to the Paul Ball style and low score. We had this a few years ago when they were high flying, scoring all the time. Did you miss it? Did you harken back a couple of years to a game like that?
From our perspective, and you always hear players sometimes enjoy playing in games like that, because the Panthers set a franchise record last night with 16 different players getting a point,
Jeez.
Including Sergei Bobrovsky.
Jeez.
I heard that from the folks on SiriusXM early this morning. That was a team record, that 16 different Panthers had a point last night, and even Sergei Bobrovsky had an assist in the game. It is fun, high event hockey, as you'd say, but I guess we are fortunate in that the way this Panthers team has been constructed and the way that they've played the last few years, even when they're in low-scoring games, the Panthers games are interesting. Their low-scoring games are still fun.
Yes.
You can't say that about every team that we've seen over the last, over this era or going back to previous eras. Sometimes low-scoring games can be a little bit, low event, but
yeah.
That was a high event game. We certainly had a good time with it, no doubt about that.
We were talking about this with you, because like hockey, I mean, I'm sure you've been doing it your whole life. You've been getting ready for this and all that stuff. How the hell do you see the deflections? You call them so well all the time. These things are blasting shots. It's just little tip by, are you on binoculars? Like, did you just grow this hockey eye? How do you see this damn thing? The game's moving so damn fast.
Well, I appreciate it, first of all, and I'll admit there are times that I'm having to look at body language. A lot of times, first and foremost, players' body language will usually tell you what you need to know. And that
when they start celebrating, yes, or he must have tipped.
Just from the perspective of sometimes the puck goes in and out so quickly, or it barely goes in the net, and a player's body language will usually tell you that, they know when the puck went in. Whether
right.
it's you see guys start to celebrate, or you see somebody from the team that got scored on start to let up on the play, because
right.
they know that the puck just went in the net. So a lot of times, just watch the players. That'll tell you what you need to know. But I'm very fortunate, and it's probably because he spent so much time in front of the net in the National Hockey League battling with defensemen, but Billy Lindsay has a really good knack for noticing A, that a deflection happened, and B, what that might have gone off of. And a lot of times what's happening in the booth is that deflection happens, the puck goes in, and even if I've caught it, Billy will grab the sheet and he starts pointing at a number.
Ah.
And so it happens a lot. So yes, the teamwork does happen. Billy has an unbelievable eye for that, but it also just comes with doing a lot of games, the repetition, and I think you could probably say that about any profession out there, but you just start to get a feel for how things look, where the celebration starts. And let's say, the guy who takes the shot isn't the one who's kind of leading the fist bump line over the bench, then you kind of know that the guy who is the first over leading that fist bump line
tipped it.
He knows he tipped it, or his teammates know he tipped
right.
it. So you get a feel for it that way.
I got to tell you, I've never seen a situation where they stop a goal. So, instead of deflecting it, they go, if you would have just left it alone, it was in the net. I've never seen that. So, is everybody on the ice that aware of that puck, holy smokes.
They do practice it a lot.
Oh, really?
Deflections are a thing that gets practiced a lot, and that's why, and Paul Maurice has used this terminology before, but with a player like Matthew Tkachuk, for example, and Sam Reinhart, one of the best in the business as well, there is an art to tipping pucks, but you can take it a step further, and a couple of these guys are so gifted with their hands and their skills with the puck and Kachuk and Reinhardt are prime examples of this, but it goes beyond just deflecting a puck, and Paul Maurice has said they almost steer it. It takes it to a different level. They're so good with that part of the game. But in the modern era, the goalies have gotten so good, and the goalies are only getting bigger. I mean, it seems like, you know, we're looking at 6'3 and 6'3 and up for the size of these goalies, which comes with huge wingspan. The days of, you know, a Mike Vernon, for example, going back to the 90s or somebody like that who, you know, was a 5'9, 5'10 goaltenders, you just don't see those as much. And when you see a goaltender who's listed at, for example, 6 foot even, he almost gets viewed a little bit on the smaller side as far as the game goes.
It blew
now.
Me away when I first met Bob. I was like,
tiny.
You're not, you see all that gear, but you're 6'1", slim, and all of these goalies now are enormous.
They're only getting bigger, it feels like. And you're starting to see goaltenders that are, like I said, 6'3 seems to almost be in the middle nowadays, and you're seeing more and more 6'4, 6'5, even goaltenders getting into that 6'6 range, which when you have a guy that big who then is going to have a wingspan that big and then is going to have equipment that needs to be that big to accommodate him, it's tough to find openings. It's tough to find a window to shoot at, and that's why these deflections, especially in the playoffs and in the big games and against teams that defend really well, it's become such a huge part of the sport.
Go ahead, Leroy.
I'm just – the other thing is it just me, because I don't watch as much hockey – but it seems like they go to the empty net a lot sooner than they were before.
So that it's a good observation, because it definitely has been the case.
Like 5 minutes left, they go, "Whoa, goalies!" I'm like, "Wait a minute, we still got a quarter of the period."
It almost used to be, if you go back to like the 90s, for example, it was kind of like the unwritten protocol that you'd get down to about a minute and a half left, a minute left,
right,
you'd pull your goalie, and it kind of changed. You go back maybe a decade when Patrick Waugh had his first tour of duty as a head coach when he was coaching the Colorado Avalanche. And again, you go back about a decade and you started to see coaches kind of just trust their gut, the feel. How's the game going? If my top guys are rested and I feel like maybe we're coming out of a media timeout and there's, you know, 5 minutes and change left and I'm just feeling good, maybe that's our opportunity and we're going to get the goalie out. And it does. It does change the dynamic in how a game is played, too. If a team's down one and all of a sudden you go that route, you play that card, if you will, it can send a jolt of momentum into a team. You might have your group with your top guys rested. You might calculate it to where, okay, my top guys are rested. Their top checking unit is not. So I have a good opportunity with a matchup late in the game that I want to get to try and tie this thing up. It's not as rigid as it used to be, where you would have coaches, okay, minute and a half left, let's start to think about getting the goalie out, and we'll do it that way. We've seen it now routinely. Some coaches have really taken it to different levels. I mean, you'll see it occasionally 5 or 6 minutes left, desperate times call for desperate measures, and a coach will pull his goaltender.
I got to get my hockey stuff out, because when I ask him a hockey question, he gets mad at me, right?
You ask very specific questions.
No,
you have like very situations that
because
are
because I'm trying to learn.
That was a fine question. Like you didn't ask like, does that happen? But also, no. If they're on the power play, so, does that count?
Here's the other thing.
You got rule 41A-2. Like that's what the things that he asked me. I'm dude, I don't know.
Did you know if you're in overtime and you go empty net and you lose, you don't get
no
a point.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy smokes.
Yep.
Why?
And that came into play in recent that came yes, into play was, in the game I, in recent
that's
years.
Why.
Yeah.
Remember I asked you about it last year.
Yep.
And they said we need 2 points. We need 2 points.
Which that can happen. And there was a specific incident. We're going way back. There was a game in the late 80s where the New Jersey Devils went into overtime against Chicago late in the game. And I think a guy that a lot of folks have come to know as an analyst, Darren Pang, was actually the goaltender for Chicago in that game. But the Devils and the Blackhawks went to overtime. It was either late in the season, may have even been the last game of the season. The Devils needed 2 points to make the playoffs. The 1 point for getting into overtime wasn't going to do it. So they had to win. And you might get into situations like that where that second point means so much. And you look now, too, across the league, that's partially why it's so difficult to make up ground and why really the worst thing you can do in the National Hockey League is have a dreadful start. You want to at least come out of the gate and be in the middle of the pack and at least tread water and do what you need to do to accumulate points. Because if you fall behind to try and make up ground when you have all these three-point games, especially in a season like this where I don't know that we've seen – I know a lot of folks like to use the word parity. You hear the phrase competitive balance – used a lot, and I think that's almost more of what we have here, and it's that all these teams truly night to night are capable of beating each other. I can't remember a season where you go into it, and I know everybody's going to always say the right things, but you go into it, and we can all look at it, and we know who the contenders are, who the teams in the middle are. We know what teams probably, for lack of a better way to put it, have a better chance at the draft lottery at the number one pick than they do it at winning the Stanley Cup. This year, you go into the season, there's like 27 out of 32 go into this thing, probably with realistic playoff aspirations and some sort of expectation that if it isn't met, there's going to be questions that that have to be asked. I don't know that we've seen a season like this in a long time where you have so many teams that are in it. And that's where these three-point games come into play and why if you fall behind, it's tough to make up ground. I guess it's a really lengthy way of answering why night to night, it's important to try and get those 2 points any way you can. And sometimes you get into spots where you absolutely have to have the 2 points.
Is it more important now with the injuries and the guys trying to – and so many guys called up aware just to stay afloat? And try to stay within reasonable distance from the top of the division or the conference, because you know when those guys come back, there's going to be a lot of pressure on them to kind of get that charge going.
Yeah, you know, the Panthers, if we're just taking it to the Panthers' perspective here at this point in the season, they've done a really good job of that. They're a couple of games over 500, a lot of home games coming up here, so there's a good opportunity to make a move. And I know I mentioned it with Hawk and Crowder the other day, but there are a lot of teams out there, and it just goes back to, first of all, how strong the leadership group in the room is. This team's won back-to-back Stanley Cups, been to 3 straight cup finals, and there's nobody sitting here comfortable with just what they've accomplished in the past. Mm-hmm. These guys know what they can do and that they're in the middle of a contending window that spans years into the future with how many key players are signed. It speaks to what Paul Maurice has been able to instill as far as a system that is picked up. Guys know what to expect. They know what the standards are. They know what to go out and do each night. And it speaks to what Bill Zito's been able to build here as far as the roster goes and the organizational depth. There are a lot of teams out there. If you were to take their top line center, another all-star forward who's a point-of-game guy, a regular defenseman that played in the cup run last year, two-thirds of their fourth line, we're talking about Tomáš Nosek and Jonah Gadjevich from the playoff run last year, if you were to take these guys out of the lineup, you could take just the two guys, the two all-star forwards out, but going beyond that, the five players I just mentioned, a lot of teams, if you took that out of their lineup, they're prepping for the draft lottery.
Yeah.
Right. The party's over.
Right.
But what the Panthers have been able to do here, to say they're in it is an understatement.
Yeah.
They're right in the thick of this thing. It's a team that still has elite players up and down the lineup, whether it's elite players in the league, guys who are elite at the roles that they're filling. It's the Panthers are in a great spot right now, even with these players out and with hopefully returns down the road on the horizon, still very much a wait and see with all of these players, an opportunity to get some reinforcements perhaps down the road.
What your first full season calling Brad Marchand every single night, this has been an unbelievable run that it's been on, but what are the things that just stand out about him every night that you watch and you just appreciate that maybe you didn't when he was on Boston?
Yeah, on the ice, the things that we knew with the Boston Bruins, you knew about the fact that he played with that emotion and it was infectious and his teammates fed off it. So you knew about that. You knew how good of a penalty killer he is. Maybe the best penalty killing forward of this generation. Not just, in Bruins history, he's one of the best penalty killers the game's ever seen. Unbelievable hands. And Paul Maurice has talked about this too, but
he does love his hands.
Good hands.
His giftedness. He's so gifted offensively and in tight spaces. It's really impressive to watch. And at this, he showing no signs of slowing down. And then you take it a step further, and we're fortunate to be around these guys at the practice rink, and whether it be on road trips, whatever the case may be. For a guy who's been in the game this long, who is a future Hall of Famer, the attitude he brings every single day. He knows when to keep things light, but he also plays with, you know, an unmatched intensity. I asked Evan Rodriguez the same question the other day, just to, you know, he's still one of the newest Panthers, Brad is, because he just came at the deadline last year, but he was obviously involved in the cup run. And Evan said one of the things you appreciate is just seeing how much he loves and just values doing this every single day. And it just, that's something that rubs off on everybody. So it's been special to watch him play every single night. And it's a really rare instance now that we're seeing where he's, when it's all said and done, and, you know, the way he's playing, no signs of slowing down. We're talking years down the road, but when it's all said and done, he's going to be absolutely beloved by two different fan bases, which is a rare situation for an athlete. You know, a lot of guys might be beloved in one place, have a little bit of success somewhere else, contribute to something. But this guy's going to be absolutely beloved in two different places.
And won championships in both places. Like, I didn't realize how just fast and just he's all over the place. Because a lot of times people say, oh, I hate that guy. He's a menace. And when you think of guys like that, they play a different style of hockey. He does. He's that. He's an antagonist. But the style of hockey, he's not like, a bruiser or anything like that. He is. It's fun.
He knows the game within the game. And the same way that Matthew Tkachuk, I thought, coming into the year or coming in just, I've thought since he was a Panther that there's really nobody who knows the game within the game, maybe who has his finger on the pulse of a game better than Matthew Tkachuk when you talk about knowing when the perfect time to lay a big hit is, the perfect time to, you know, try and turn the momentum of a game. He just knows exactly. He's just so dialed in. Brad's that same kind of guy.
Doug Plagans joining us here in studio. Before we get you out of here, a couple big ones coming up. You got New Jersey's having a hell of a season. They're coming up on Thursday, and then
Jack Hughes, the freak injury that happened there.
And then you got the cup rematch coming up on this week. Is there one out of those two you're more looking forward to, or just kind of see where this team is at?
They're both important games. I think you look at the New Jersey game, even without Jack Hughes for the better part of a couple of months, what they're saying, it's still a very talented team and a team that's going to be playoff bound. If somehow New Jersey didn't make the playoffs, then there was a collapse that took place. So it's I know we overuse people in our seats overuse the phrase measuring stick game sometimes, but these are, you have to look at them that way in a sense, because I mean, don't look now. We've already played about a quarter of the season. We're getting close to that mark of the year. 25% of this thing's flown by faster than I think anybody could have ever envisioned because the condensed schedule, the Olympics this year, everything like that. So you do need to look at games like New Jersey coming up, a team that you may run into down the road in a playoff matchup, something like that. But always interesting with Edmonton. It's gotten to be that way, obviously. A history, to say the least, between these two, and the Panthers have beaten them in the Cup final back-to-back years, and Edmonton not having the type of season they would like to be having
look at
right
the
now.
Do you think, because I'm not following them day-to-day, like, are they going through a lot of just the fatigue of the runs, too, you think that's happening, or are there other struggles that they're dealing with?
They had a tough start last year. If we're talking about it right now, I don't love the supporting cast of the roster that they have now. I haven't loved the supporting cast. I've been fine. If I'm looking at it from Edmonton's perspective the last couple of years, I couldn't say I was ever more than fine with the supporting cast that they had. I thought the supporting cast, and when I say the supporting cast, I mean the guys who aren't McDavid, Draisaitl, Evan Bouchard. So I think the first year the two teams met in the Cup final, the series that went to seven, I thought that Edmonton's supporting cast was the strongest in that of these three seasons. In that year, I thought it was the strongest. Last year, I thought it was a little bit of a notch below the previous year. And this year, I think there are some unknowns. There are some young guys, some guys that maybe haven't turned the corner yet. And, you know, it's a team that has had some slow starts in recent years. And, I mean, Leroy, you might be able to speak to this more, just knowing what a pro athlete goes through and the grind of everything. But in their scenario, to go all the way to the finish line, back-to-back years, and then fall just short, and then have to wind it all back up and try to do it all over again. I mean, that has to take a bit of a toll.
The biggest problem with all of it is that you bring, you know, the whole organization comes out with this plan to beat the Florida Panthers. But all the other teams are doing it too. So the next team that you might have to face to win a Stanley Cup might not be the Florida Panthers. And now you've gotten ready for a team that's not there. And it just keeps, you know, it's so rare for a team to go to three straight finals in anything. So to say you're getting ready for them, it's not like Florida getting ready for Tampa or Florida with Carolina, right? This is totally different. There's a lot of good teams out there. And I give you a perfect example. We went 15-1. We lost to Atlanta in overtime, which till this day drives me crazy. We figured we're that good. We'll come back this next. Next year, we're okay. We got to the playoffs. Guess who we ran into? The greatest show on turf. We were up 27-20. So we go in at halftime. No bigs. Go finish this. I'll go to the next one. We lost 49-27.
Jesus.
We think we're getting ready for Denver and we're getting ready for Atlanta. And here comes the greatest show on turf who had a run of 3 or 4 years. That's how sports is crazy. And that even when we project, when we project NFL season or what team's going to be good or not, we always forget about the teams getting better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We only think about the teams we saw last year. Who's going to be that team that comes out of nowhere that finally puts it all together like the Panthers did 3 or 4 years ago? There's going to be a couple of those teams. There are going to be a couple teams.
Hey, that's you always have to remind yourself there are 31 other teams trying to win this thing too. And the Panthers. So what the Panthers are doing is absolutely historic. And then you have the short off season. So everybody says, how do you recover? How do you overcome the short off season and not having that time to heal? Well, it's a lot easier to deal with when your short off season is full of parading the Stanley Cup around and you get to experience that, and then you get to have everything, and you get to raise a banner. Yeah. Imagine being the Edmonton Oilers and playing all the way to June 24th 1 year, and then playing all the way to June 17th the next year, and all you have is a couple of conference championship banners to show for it. That has to take a toll.
I think that this team is kind of feeling the wear and tear a little bit as far as the Panthers, but they've done a good job of getting other guys in, give them a chance to get healthy. I think the biggest issue is you can just see some of the injuries that they're having is like muscular. Like with Kachuk, groin. It's not bone stuff. It's like groin because you've just been going at it for so long. These guys have played almost an extra season of hockey. So, and everybody else has played 3 seasons of hockey. They've played enough games for 4. So just imagine adding an extra year. It catches up and you have to be, you know, safe. They're in really good shape because I've never watched on the ice and go, that guy's taking a break. Like, I've never seen
it. No, they play hard.
Right, they play hard. And to do that, it takes a different type of person to be able to go through that. And Paul Maurice just has a way of getting it out of him. It's hard.
You look at Anton Lundell, for example. He's a fifth-year guy who basically has played 6 years in the NHL because you add up basically a full season's worth of playoff games.
He's also the most spoiled young player in the NHL.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. 5 years. I've been to 3 Stanley Cups. This is easy league.
Catch Doug Plagans Thursday night, Cats and Devils. You can hear that right here on QAM. Doug, appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Great to see you guys in person.
Great to see you. We'll take a break, get you caught up with your headlines back after this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. 2 new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back. We're better. Let's get it.